Okay, I'm number one.
Good morning, everyone. I am Randy Christman, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, and joined by Commissioners Brian Crashus and Julie Fedorchak. This is an informal hearing this morning, and I apologize. We're starting a little bit late because of some technical difficulty with our microphone system. The case number that we have today is PU-18-156. This is the Northern States Power Company tax reform effects on the gas utility rates. It is Wednesday, October 31st, 10:35 a.m. And so we will start this informal hearing. As I mentioned, myself and the commissioners here will go around the room and others can introduce themselves for the record. Starting with Daryl Nitschke.
Daryl Nitschke with the Public Service Commission.
Dave Cedarquist, Xcel Energy.
Victor Shook with Advocacy Staff.
John Shu with Advocacy Staff. And Commissioner, just for the record, this is also involves case PU-17-490. That's the original tax reform case that was opened up, and most of these records are somewhat combined.
Good point. Thank you for clarifying that. And do we have others calling in that would identify themselves for the record?
Good morning. Ryan Long for Xcel Energy.
Tom Kramer, Xcel Energy.
Okay, and Jerry and Adam are here from Public Utilities, but you didn't intend to comment necessarily, or? Okay. I want to emphasize this is an informal hearing, which involves only undisputed facts. If there are disputed facts, we will wrap up and issue a notice of hearing. And with that, I don't know, either Commissioner, did you have any comments before the applicant typically or always goes first in the informal hearings, but did either of you have comments first, Commissioner Fedorchak? Commissioner Crashus?
I do not.
We'll turn it over to you, Dave, or if Ryan or Tom are speaking or whoever, but
yeah, I'll make a
turn to you since we can see you.
Yep, thanks, Commissioner. It's good to be here today. Thanks for the opportunity to discuss the settlement. I'm assuming this is on. My comment should be fairly brief because I really believe that this settlement's fairly straightforward and actually a relatively simple settlement. Vic used the words timely and efficient in his memo to describe how this settlement deals with not only the tax cuts issue, but to some degree also the manufactured gas plant docket as well. What the settlement really does is it takes advantage of the I guess I'll say coincidental timing of these two issues, the tax cuts legislation and then the company's final MGP cleanup project in the state of North Dakota. What it does is it fully conveys the benefits of the tax laws, of the tax reform law to customers while at the same time kind of kick-starting the recovery and the payment of the MGP project, which I'll just say that the company is pretty proud to say that we're on the last legs of this project. We're very proud of the work that we did working with public officials, the city officials, state officials, the public themselves. This project was took place in the midst of the state's largest city, involved even apartment building on the site, so a very complicated project, but it's been going along very well. So once staff and the company began sort of talking about maybe pairing up these two dockets, I think it didn't take us very long to agree to the details of the settlement. I've put together, along with staff's review, a kind of a one-page summary, which I'm hopeful will help to sort of convey some of the key elements of the settlement, and then also just kind of give you a little feel for some of the thinking behind it, what some of the benefits are. I would like to kind of start by saying, though, that the fundamental aspect of this settlement which really makes it work is the matching of the MGP amortization to the amount of the annual tax Cuts and Jobs Act savings. For purposes of the settlement, you know, we agreed to define the tax cut as $1.25 million. That's based on our modeling of 2018 and 2019 test years, revenue requirements. I believe 1 year was like $1.3 million, 1 year was $1.2. We just cut the baby right in half there and went with $1.25 as our defined savings annually. And so then what we did is we defined the amortization to be $1.25 million as well. And there's two things to remember about that or to highlight about that. The $1.25 million per year actually does create sort of a lengthy amortization period, longer probably than most of these MGP projects would go for. It could be as long as 10 to 15 years at that rate. It really depends. We don't have all the costs in, and of course, at this point, we don't have all of the insurance proceeds that we hope to be able to collect. So it's a little bit hard, but that's one thing. The other thing, that the advantage, I guess, with that is it does minimize or mitigate the impact to customers. It's extending it out over a fairly long period. But given this length of time, staff has agreed to support the concept of having a carrying charge, a small one, that roughly approximates our debt costs. But of course, it's subject to the commission's full review of the project costs itself, including the debt, any debt charges. We'll be filing a sort of a project report with the commission in the future here. Once the project's complete, once we have all those sort of costs related to it, and there may actually have to be supplemental reporting. We have some litigation that we're working through on the insurance side. We won't know the results of that until probably mid-2020, so we'll have to sort of keep the commission appraised of the outcome of that as well.
Dave, can you repeat that, what you said about 2020? I was looking at the thing and missed that.
Yeah, well, we're about getting ready to sort of wrap up this project, and we'll have the costs within a few months. I'm just saying that the litigation that we are currently or will be undergoing with the insurance providers, we have I think it's been scheduled for spring of 2020, and we won't know the results until later that summer in 2020.
So we won't have a final number until then?
Right, a final net number. We'll have to sort of supplement the final number we give you in 2019 with the results of that litigation.
I see. Okay, good.
Is it multiple cases or one case?
There are. My understanding is that there are multiple parties, multiple insurers, but I think there's just going to be one case. Okay. Perhaps Ryan, maybe you know something about that.
That's consistent with my understanding too. It's multiple parties, multiple insurance policies at issue involving multiple insurers, but it is one consolidated litigation.
Thank you. So just turning to the one-page document, I'll just quickly run through the terms. I won't talk about the entire document here. But as far as the terms, there's really four main things happening in this settlement. First of all, beginning in 2018, the company would begin to amortize the $1.25 million of expense for the manufactured gas plant project. Natural gas rates would not change. That would allow the company to offset that amortization expense with those TCJA savings. And that situation would just continue on until the company's next rate case. At that time, in the next case, the company will then fold in the TCJA savings and the impact of the tax law into the base rate, into our test year, and then presumably in final rates. And then at the same time, we have a path outlined in the settlement that would, where the company would request from the commission a waiver of the cost of gas rider rules to allow the company to move the $1.25 million amortization expense into the cost of gas rider. So again, the net effect on customers is still zero, I mean, the tax cuts law will be in the base rates, and the recovery amortization would be in the cost of gas rider.
Dave, one more question on that. When you do the, when the, at the time of the next rate case and you figure out the full effects of the TCJA, will that be a calculation of the actuals that is more precise than what we're estimating today? Or will it still be the, what you guys, you said the 1.25 million, will you just be carrying that forward, or will there be more of a precise way to calculate the exact?
Well, I think the report that we're committing to in the settlement to be filed within 90 days of the completion of the project, that will be very precise about the costs of the project.
Okay. I'm sorry, I might have misspoke. The costs, I'm talking about the benefits of the TCJA. I mean, we're, yeah.
The benefits of the TCJA, we hadn't really talked about refining that anymore. I suppose in the next rate case, it might be evident in the test year. We might get a new number. And
that's my question.
Right now our projections for are the 1.25 as far out as 2019, I think. Let me ask Tom Kramer, did we happen to model anything further out than 2019?
No, we have not at this time. We just took 2018 and 2019.
Was that based on, one question related to that, is that based on the anticipated return on equity of 7.2 and 6.9 in 2018 and 2019, or did you just take ongoing operations?
That was based on the current authorized returns.
Okay. So it's possible then, in fact, I would almost say highly probable, that TCJA benefits will not be at the 1.25 million if ROE isn't achieved.
Tom, do you have any sense as to how the authorized return on equity would impact that? If the authorized return went down slightly, for example, any feel for how that would impact the savings?
Well, not even necessarily authorized, just in reality, in terms of what, I mean, the TCJA of approximately 1.25 million is based on an anticipated rate of return or return on equity, which then that would be applicable in terms of the tax bracket. So if that number, let's say it was in half, I think you could argue that the TCJA benefit would also proportionately drop to half. So that there might be some flex in that number, and flex might not be the best word, but
yeah. Well, I think the company is more or less taking that risk on. We've committed to the 1.25 in the interim period before the next case. Once we file the next case, the ROE that's in the test year will be a proposed ROE. It will not be an actual one. It'll be
right
what we believe is fair and reasonable. The only other thing I will add to the settlement terms
before
again.
You continue, Dave. Sure. I just want to ask, is advocacy planning on kind of bringing something forward, a discussion, or just here to answer questions?
I have a few comments I'll make once Dave's done with this presentation.
Okay. Then I'll hold off on a question I have.
The only thing I was going to just mention again here is that we will be filing a construction report or a project report within 90 days of the completion of the project. That's also detailed in the settlement. I won't go through some of the rationale there or the execution. I thought it might be helpful under the execution there to just kind of lay out for you, here's what would happen here, you know, specifically going on. But one thing I will just mention, it's sort of maybe an extra feature of having the long-term MGP costs through the cost of gas rider is when that amortization is then finished, it just automatically drops out of the cost of gas rider. There's no need to do any kind of a regulatory proceeding to reduce the rates. They just fall right out of the cost of gas rider. So I just wanted to point that out.
And are we locked into that time frame through the settlement, the 15-year amortization, or could in the next rate case we decide let's speed that up and take care of this?
Yeah, I think that option would exist, subject to staff's view on that. But, I mean, definitely once we file a case, then we can take a look at the situation. And by then, of course, we might even know more about the net costs with netted against the insurance recovery.
And can someone speak to the carrying cost? I don't see where that's explained in here, but I could have missed it.
There is a short footnote on the bottom of page 4 in the settlement, footnote number 4.
Okay.
It's, I guess, somewhat typical. We've had some large cleanup projects in the state of Wisconsin. There's some long recovery times there, too, but because of that long period to finance that and hold that, mm-hmm. the compromise has been to allow at least the cost of debt.
So does that change every year, or how does that, what is that number?
Yeah, I think about now it's in that 3% range, and I don't believe it changes dramatically from year to year, but it can change.
And so you file that, I mean, how do we track that?
That's probably in the annual report of earnings. There's a cost of capital page in there that shows the cost of debt.
Okay. So this spells out that a return approximating the company's related debt cost is appropriate. So is it the company's related debt costs, or is it subject to change?
Commissioner, this is advocacy staff's position on this, and ultimately, as it states in that footnote, it is subject to your guidance on this as well. We were just saying for the purpose of the settlement, we believe that it probably will be appropriate. That can be put at a number of numbers, so it is subject to change, because this number won't come up and about for full discussion until the time of the next rate case as a deferred asset as it is right now.
Okay, so not until it goes into the cost of gas does it get the carrying charge, or do we put that on right away?
Commissioner, it will be ultimately decided in the next rate case with the total, because my understanding.
Very good. Okay. Thanks.
And I just saw here that we reported 2.20% of a fully weighted cost of debt in our 2017 earnings report.
Okay. I think it's reasonable. I just wanted to flesh out how that's decided and when. So,
let's see here. What else I wanted to point out? There is a. I just thought to give some context. On the back, there is a chart there of typical bills for the company in North Dakota. It's the green line. You can see that largely because of the cost of gas, those bills have gone down. $30 to $40 over the last 10 years. Just so you understand, the estimated bill impact of the 1.25 million TCJ is about 70 cents a month. So, not a huge change to the customer bill. If we were to do even just a one-time refund, if that would have been an option, kind of similar to the electric settlement, it would have been about $8. For the typical residential customer. So just to give you a little bit of a perspective of the magnitude of the numbers we're talking about.
Can you remind me how many residential?
We have about 48,000 residentials in North Dakota. So I guess just in summary, I'll just say that, you know, we believe the settlement applies the full measure of the tax cuts to rates. It initiates the paying down of the MGP in 2018, and it does all of this without any sort of special rate proceeding or incremental rate proceeding. That's one of the advantages of waiting until the next rate case, and we can fold it in while we're folding other costs and stuff into rates as well, so we kind of save a little bit of work from that angle. And that's all the comments I had. If there's questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them.
I have in my notes from, I don't know, last summer or whenever we discussed it at length, that your estimate for the cleanup cost at the time was $22.6 million. Is that still the best estimate, or has that already changed in any significant amount?
I think it has maybe gone up a little bit for just the cost. What we're planning on doing is before this week is over, I think by Friday, we're going to file the next quarterly update on this project, but we're going to do it under a trade secret protection because there are some insurance, there's some insurance information we want to disclose, and apparently it's confidential given that we're in the midst of the litigation. So sure. That'll help answer that question, Commissioner, but I think the cost piece has slightly gone up, but I think there's also some good news on the insurance side too.
But it would be slight. It's in that ballpark.
Yeah. Yes.
Would you say?
Yep.
Okay. And I think well, what I had in my notes was that about 12% of that 22.6. Well, I would say. Let me ask it differently. I'm thinking 12% of whatever the total is would be a Minnesota cost, and the other 88% apportioned to North Dakota consumers. Correct.
Correct.
And you talked about completing soon here, and back then we had talked about a fall of this year completion date. Are we still on course to be done, say, by the end of the year?
Or yeah, I think so. That's my understanding. That's what I've heard, is that we're getting ready to wrap this up. So,
and is there a time period that's known of how long things have to be monitored or something before that land can be sold for redevelopment, or yep. What's the status of that?
My understanding again here is that now the property will be monitored for 2 years. There will be no activity, no construction activity or anything on that. We'll be monitoring the soil to see if there's any residual vapors or whatever. So
you anticipate a profit or a loss on having purchased the land and then the resale price? And I'm not talking about cleanup costs.
There will not be a profit.
Yeah.
My understanding is that the original owners have an option to buy it. If they don't want to buy it, then it would go out for bids. But, you know, we purchased the property with the building on it and everything, and we're just selling the land now. So,
right. And that's all factored in, though.
Yeah, right. Yep, that's part of the cost.
Along with anticipated insurance proceeds, along with tax breaks from the city of Fargo?
I'm not sure about that.
One point in time, I thought you were pursuing a...
Oh, yeah, that never went anywhere.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just briefly interrupt Dave. I just want to bring to the commissioner's attention, too, that with regards to the proceeds, I know there was some concern about that in the past. The company agreed to pass back any of the proceeds that they would actually get from the sale of the property back to the ratepayers as it relates to the Fargo MGP plants. And if I can approach, I could just provide these to you.
Sure.
This is any returns from resale or insurance settlements, correct?
I think this specifically is for the actual sale, but we've spoken in the past about the insurance proceeds as well.
Oh, Jack, you probably should answer that on the microphone. Sorry.
I think in the past the company has agreed at least that they would pass back the insurance proceeds back to offset the expenses to the ratepayers. And this one I think was more directed specifically to the actual proceeds from the sale of the property in Fargo.
Thank you.
And will that be all part of that final calculation of what the net cost
recovery,
is?
The net deferral?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
That will be amortized.
Very good.
Does that complete the company's comments?
Yes.
Advocacy staff?
Thank you.
But you'd still avail yourself to answer questions?
Of course. Yep.
Thank you.
So just to kind of recap our position, the 1.25
Victor Shook.
Yes. 1.25 million is actually slightly in excess of what we estimate the 2018 TCJA impact to be. primarily because of a couple of tweaks we made relative to the company's initial calculation. Initially, the company was estimating about $1.3 million TCJA reduction for 2018 and $1.2 million for 2019. That's closer to $1.2 for 2018 as well, because we are taking the non-plant EDIT and amortizing that. I believe we're doing three years?
3 years.
Yes.
Yeah. And in this case, the non-plant EDIT is not really a ratepayer benefit. It's to their detriment. So it's about $225,000 that gets added to the revenue requirement. So that kind of drops the benefit of the TCJA by one-third of that amount. Kind of it roughly nets out the plant EDIT that has to be amortized with the ARAM method, as we've seen.
And this is what I brought up before, where I wanted to ask you about, and what's confusing me on this. So in your August 31st memo, you laid out the TCJA savings as being $1.201 million for the income tax reduction, $117,000 for the plant EDIT, and $75,000 credit on the non-plant EDIT for a net of $1.243 million. And so that's been my maybe biggest hang up on this is, why is it not 1.243 instead of 1.25?
So amortizing. I guess essentially we were just due to negotiations, we kind of thought it was easier to do a little bit more round number, and it's to the ratepayers' benefit in this case to round up to 1.25. But you are correct. If we were taking the actuals for 2018, it would be 1.243.
I have a question that goes backwards a little bit.
Oh, okay. I had written down 1.125. It's not 1.25. So that's what seems so perplexing, why we had gone backwards on that. Well, that sounds much better for the consumers. Thank you.
Go ahead.
So back to the sale, and I'm reading in Chris Clark's stipulation here that the current total estimates proceeds from the sale was a price already agreed to on the proceeds of the sale with the potential buyers?
I think there's an agreed to option price for the original. And that arrangement allowed us to purchase the building and the land for a lower amount. So
okay. All right.
It was a beneficial negotiation.
And what was, when you purchased the amount, purchased it, Dave, can you talk at all about whether, you know, what kind of comparables were taken into consideration? Tell me about that negotiation a little bit with the landowner.
I think, Commissioner, that if it's possible, I'd like to follow up with that information.
Okay.
I'm not close enough to that negotiation to be able to answer you very well, so I would be happy to follow up with kind of a clear answer.
Sure.
Victor, are you still?
Yeah, just a little bit more. So a couple other provisions we were pretty happy about in the settlement. We are preserving the commission's further review of the MGP project as a whole. You know, we are applying $1.25 million annually until the next rate case. However, we're not determining that the entire investment in the cleanup is prudent. And along with that, the return component that was discussed, all of that is up for future review and debate for what is appropriate. So we thought that was pretty important that we're not settling other cases by what we did here. So I think that's about all I have, unless there's other questions. Jack might have something here, I guess.
I guess just to clarify a couple things, and not with regards to Victor's, but with regards to just a couple things we all touched on. And this might give you guys a little more background, just so you guys have a more full disclosure on the settlement agreement. With regards to the carrying costs, in the past we haven't actually had a carrying cost included in any of the previous MGP plants. Some states will have allowed full recovery with shareholder returns. We haven't. In this one, we did agree, and this is partially due to just such an enormous amount of money for the company to carry for an extensive period of time. If you look at it as a relative to the 2001 case, which was about $2.8 million, and I think it was just like under $1 million for the cost recovery for and to use MGP plant as well. Just to reiterate what Victor says, we were really careful to make sure that this is all subject to review and adjustment in the future. That provides an incentive for the company as they're going forward with their litigation and to ensure that they do take all reasonable and necessary steps in order to get all the funds back that they can from the litigation back to ratepayers, because it's still subject to your oversight and prudency review. Just to head off, I see Alana's back, and I'm assuming she was going to come in and discuss the cost of gas rider. Okay, she discussed that with me before, but that is a provision in there. It may not have been absolutely necessary to put it in here at this point in time, but this also is consistent with the precedent of how we've done cost recovery in the past, but these MGP plants as well. If you look back at case, I think it was PU400-00521, and I think it's pretty similar as well with the PU10-589 case that we did as well. I think that covers everything else that I had to discuss since we talked about the stipulation as well.
I have a couple of questions. One is probably more semantics on the handout that you provided. The extended amortization period, 10 to 15 years, at 1.25, it actually be 12 to 16 years. So I think it's just...
Well, we don't, Commissioner, we're not really sure what that total deferral will be. So it's a little hard to even know what, mm-hmm. I mean.
I'm just doing a quick math on it at 1.25. But here's the second thing that caught my eye, the estimated residential bill impact is about 70 cents per month.
Yes.
So at 48,000 residential customers times 12 months would be 576,000 billable months per year, times 70 cents would be 403,200, correct? Probably. I think that I think those numbers are right. Where is the other? That's only about, that's just slightly less than one third of the 1.25 million. The rest then would be beneficial, would have been beneficial on the commercial side. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, I know that residential sales are about a third of our total sales, so it doesn't surprise me that the dollar figure you're coming up with would be roughly a third of the total.
Okay, so that breaks the same way. Okay.
I don't have any more questions.
Do you have any more questions, Commissioner Crashes?
No. I think everything is straightforward.
Nor do I.
Good.
Is there anything else for discussion?
I don't have anything else.
No, I don't either.
Thank you.
A reasonable approach, and I appreciate all your guys' work to get to this point and come up with this plan.
I do, too. I'm just going to say that, you know, I've been kind of back and forth, and being with this got a lot easier when I realized my mistake in my notes that had carried on probably from day one, where I used that one figure from the million line and got it over, and I was feeling like we were leaving some money on the table, and so I feel much better about that now. But part of me also, regardless of what the numbers were, felt like there should be a lowering of rates here, and that they would the consumers would experience that. Then when we get the costs, we deal with that. But as we go between the numbers on the gas plant cleanup being so unpredictable, yet to the extent they are even somewhat predictable, being kind of in line with this, that it will make a significant dent in it, it seems, but it's also very likely to be too much, very unlikely to be too much either. Hopefully it is, and then we can refund more, but that seems probably unlikely. And then in simplifying it down, I was just saying, you know, if you trade it in a vehicle, you don't expect to necessarily get a check for it. You know that it's coming off of something else you're acquiring. And in this case, although I've expressed all along that I fear that it just seems odd to me that of all the previous and all the subsequent owners of this property, that it seems like no one else should have any liability. And this one owner that many people would deem to be deep-pocketed ends up with the responsibility. But we don't know how the courts are going to play out. I appreciate the emphasis that this is not a commitment to our determination of prudency. So it just seems like this fits into place pretty well to avoid the bouncing around in rates of 1 month we lower the rates because of the TCJA, and then a very short time later bump them back up in order to start accruing money to pay for the gas plant cleanup. So I don't know, until I hear something different, this seems pretty reasonable to me. Mr. Cedarquist.
I was just going to point out the last bullet on that handout does get to your point about what if we're so fortunate that, you know, the insurance recoveries bring this net balance down to a number that's below what we've already recovered through this interim thing. And of course, company is fully prepared to refund anything if that were to occur. But you're right, it's fairly unlikely.
Okay, but don't say fortunate to get that successful.
Just a housekeeping issue, Commissioner. I know there's some discussion about the negotiating terms of the contract with regards to the proceeds of the sale of the Fargo property. This will all be looked at the time of the next rate case, ultimately, with a prudency review. However, I just want to see if that is something the commission does feel that it could use in making the decision, or whether they would just be fine with pushing that off to the rate case.
I'd rather do it in the rate case.
Okay.
Or when the numbers are final.
Sure.
Which would be... Final, like after...
Are you asking whether we would be wanting to have approval of authority before a sale is made?
No.
As opposed to just blending whatever the dollar amount is into the next rate case? Or I'm not understanding the question, maybe.
Mr. Chairman, during this informal, I believe that it was brought up that during the discussion about the negotiating terms with the possibility of the previous owner of the site being able to repurchase at some term for the proceeds of the property. And it seemed as though some sort of filing was requested. I just want to make sure I just want to see if that's necessary or if that's something in the next rate case you'd be comfortable looking at.
Yeah.
Either way is fine.
I think that's fine to wait. It is part of the prudency, and once you clarified that, I think that we're good. I'm fine with waiting.
Next rate case.
I'm also fine on that, but just want to emphasize that, you know, if the company chose to do, you know, to give something away, that after going through all the costs of, you know, probably turning a mess into almost a greenfield development site in the heart of Fargo, that would not seem like a very prudent move on my part.
Sure.
Yeah. From my perspective, not on my part. Anything else?
Oh, those are all the comments I have. We appreciate your time, commissioners, and we just, as Victor Shook has put out, that we believe it's a just and reasonable result, and we request that this be approved.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, did you have anything else from an advisory standpoint? Commissioners, one last time. Okay. Are there any objections to the evidence produced today, both anything that was handed out as well as the audio and video becoming part of the official record?
No objection.
No.
Both sides stated no. So that evidence will become part of the record, which upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record one more time?
We just one other thing, Commissioner. The record probably would be a little more expansive since we didn't bring in the application. And so I would request that all the items in the docket be moved into the record as opposed to just the items at the hearing today.
That will be the case.
Yeah, thank you.
With that, we are closed. Thank you, everyone, and thank you for your patience during our...